My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Valentine's Day is traditionally a day to acknowledge romantic love through the exchange of gifts, cards, and celebration. It affords partners the opportunity to reflect on what their relationship means and what they mean to one another. For some, this reflection may show a darker side and one predicated on abuse, emotional pain, and toxicity. This is especially true when the partnership mirrors negative relationships of the past, those between sensitive or empathic people and narcissists. Is it possible to break the cycle of destructive negative relationships and find self-worth, self-love, and happiness? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dr. Rita Louise, has explored this very question and has developed a forward-thinking, caring, and winning solution. A survivor of childhood abuse herself, Dr. Rita Louise has emerged as a gifted empath and talented clairvoyant medical intuitive. She's a naturopathic physician and founder of the Institute of Applied Energetics that trains students in the art of medical intuition, intuitive counseling, and energy medicine. She's authored 6 books and produced several feature-length and short films. Dr. Rita has appeared on radio, television, and in movies, and has lectured on health and healing, ghosts, intuition, ancient mysteries, and the paranormal. Her books and articles have worldwide circulation. Her website is soulhealer.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her brand new book, The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist: Create Healthy Relationships by Healing Childhood Trauma. Please welcome back to Destination Unlimited my dear friend, Dr. Rita Louise. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Victor. It is so nice to be with you, hear your voice, and hang out with your listeners.
Thank you, Rita. And it's wonderful to have you here. And the timing of this couldn't be better, because this coming Friday on this initial airing of the show is Valentine's Day.
I know. You know, I was putting this book together and I had 2 criteria. 1, it needed to feel right with the release date. And 2, you know, and as you've read the book, you know, and my antagonist growing up was my mom. And actually, you'll appreciate this story. And so I told myself I couldn't release the book until she passed, because I didn't want to put her in an uncomfortable situation. And Victor, I literally wrote the last chapter, not the epilogue of the book, but the last, like, hardcore concrete chapter of the book, and she passed 2 days later. And I was like, okay, that's
the sign.
That's the sign. Yeah.
You know, we've discussed many of your wonderful and insightful books over the years, but the subject matter of this one is truly different. What was the genesis of this work and your new book?
Well, about a year ago, I was in a relationship with this man who was odd, to say it kindly. And the relationship was really toxic, and I found myself behaving in ways that were really not healthy for me. And so I decided that the relationship needed to end. He would keep crossing boundaries and was just awful. He was just awful. And so I, you know, kicked him out and was taking his stuff to his house. And because I knew that if I waited for him to pick it up, it would be, you know, like 20 years from now that he'd finally get his junk. And I'm sitting in a restaurant. I went with a friend who had a truck, and I'm like, you know what? Can you drop me at a restaurant and you go on, take the stuff there, and then just come pick me up, which he was fine with. And I'm sitting in the restaurant and I get a text, and this was just so synchronistic. I get a text from my ex-husband's wife, who I've only ever talked to once. And she's like, you know, he's exhibiting these behaviors and can we talk? And so now, of course, my nosiness is like all perked up. And I get to her on the phone later that day, and the first thing out of her mouth is, he's a narcissist. And I had just really started investigating that material because I felt like the guy that I just got rid of was a narcissist. And so her comment made me start thinking about my relationship with my ex-husband. And it took me down this path looking at relationship. I mean, you know, I've been married too many times. I'll just say it that way. And and, you know, back to my family of origin and the, you know, abusive relationship that I had with my parents and in my family and the family dynamics. And it was like this giant Band-Aid had been ripped off. You know, you go around and you think, I'm okay. You know, people think I'm cool, blah, 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 blah. Until you realize that you're not. And it just sent me into really the dark night of the soul to dig myself out from this place that, being as intuitive as I am, didn't even know existed. Mm.
Mm. You open your book in a very, very, I would refer to it as a brutally honest way, but it was totally honest. That was a difficult process, wasn't that, sharing what your relationship with your mom was like?
It was hard. You know, one of the things that I'm very upfront about is that, you know, I allow spirit to dictate the direction my life will take. And so this whole situation happened and I started kind of digging around and looking at videos to heal myself. And I got this message, you need to write a book. I'm like, okay. I just released a book like 6 months before. And it's like, you need to write a book. It's like, okay, I can do that. And so I said, okay, well, I'll write this book. And then the next message was, you have to tell your story. And I was like, oh, okay. But Victor, I have to tell you something. There's the writing part, which, you know, I think we've all sit down and kind of, you know, journaled about what's going on inside of us. But it was the writing and knowing that I was going to take this piece of material and expose myself potentially to the entire world, was probably the more challenging part of the whole thing. But I think, and I think this is the part that I want people to hear, you know, especially if you came from a toxic household or have been in abusive relationships, is that we don't realize how much shame is tied to our history, and we don't tell people, and it's this little secret that we keep, you know, folded up in our back pocket that we don't want people to know. But Victor, after writing that with the understanding that this was going to be part of this piece of work, it was so freeing for me because it's not a secret anymore. And I can just sit there and go, yeah, that's part of my history. That's why I have so much character.
Was it a visceral process? Did you feel it?
Very much so. You know, and it just came out. You know, it just came out. And so what is on paper, I mean, it was grammatically edited, and I cut a couple of parts out just because it was entirely too long. But as far as going through and changing the feeling in it and, you know, making it be more dramatic or whatever, no, that was pretty much how it came out.
How did the relationship with your mother affect your future relationships?
You know, and I give my mom all the blame, but, you know, she was part of it, you know, because my family, my brothers and sisters were not that great either. But don't say that out loud, and please don't ever tell them I said that out loud on air. You know, what I learned was that, you know, that I didn't have any value, and that I learned how to just stand there and take it. You know, take the verbal abuse, take the maltreatment, take whatever was handed to me. And after a few days, I'd get over it and then I'd go back for more. You know, because you can't leave. You can't sit there and beat your parents up. You can't do anything. You're stuck. And so the choice is you get over it or not. You know, and if you want to have any kind of life, I learned to get over it. And that followed me from relationship to relationship. They do something crappy. They treat me bad. You know, they ignore my thoughts and feelings. And I'll get upset. And then I'd get over it and I'd walk back for some more.
Why do you think your relationship with your mother and your dad was different than that of your siblings?
In the family dynamics, I was the scapegoat. And so my parents weren't the only people that picked on me.
Why were you the scapegoat? I think that's the question I'm asking. Why were you the scapegoat?
I don't know. I asked one of my sisters, my older sister, and she said, well, you're the only one that ever stood up for yourself. You know, and you're the only one that ever questioned it. And you're the only one that ever didn't just stand there and quietly take it.
So you were kind of rebellious and precocious.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And so consequently, you became basically the whipping post for everybody in the family.
Right. Exactly. You know, and they learned that it was okay to sit there and be mean to me because my parents wouldn't do anything about it.
My guest is Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking about the dysfunctional dance of the empath and narcissist, her brand new book. And we'll be back with more of Rita and her story and what she's found in this process after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Roll up to the Mystical Minds Convention. Step right this way. Coming March 28th and 29th in Newark, California, just south of San Francisco, the first annual Mystical Minds Convention. Founded by Melanie Marquis, Mystical Minds is a new pagan, paranormal, and metaphysical convention created to expand our minds as well as our networks. Enjoy a weekend of fun, learning, and making connections in a comfortable and welcoming space that fosters unity by honoring the diversity of minds, bodies, and spirits. This is Victor the Voice Furman, and I am honored to be a featured presenter and panelist. For more information and to register, visit mysticalmindsconvention.com and roll up for the Mystical Minds Convention. Step right this way.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance will come in with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
When you shop Goodwill, you don't just bring home a vintage dress or cat lamp. You bring home so much good to your community, because everything you buy funds local job training and more. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is my friend Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking about the dysfunctional dance of the empath and narcissist. Create healthy relationships by healing childhood trauma. Rita, why do those of us who were abused as children seem to unconsciously seek out relationships that mirror that abuse?
I think the biggest thing is that it's something that we're used to. This is how relationships are. This is, you know, I like to say it all goes back to our programming. You know, as we're growing up, we're taught this is proper behavior. This is not proper behavior. And so as we get into relationships, we will accept things that might be toxic that somebody else that maybe has better boundaries or has a better understanding of relationships would not put up with or tolerate. You know, it's interesting. A friend of mine brought the point forward that sometimes we train our partners to treat us crappy. You know, because we don't because we don't know how to express ourselves because we've been so trained in taking care of everybody else or doing this or doing that or not speaking up for ourselves, not having boundaries, that we don't express to them what we want and what we need. And so they just do what they want, regardless of if it hurts us or not. And they might not even know that they're doing it because we haven't trained them to the contrary, because we don't have experience. We don't, you know, if you grow up in a toxic household, a dysfunctional household, you've never learned what healthy is.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have an example of that, something to predicate your relationships on.
Well, and you watch shows like The Brady Bunch and it's like, you know, that's fantasy. But apparently there are families that are kind of like that.
Absolutely.
Not mine, but.
I know. Now, most of our listeners are familiar with the words narcissist and empath, but let's look at both of these. What is a narcissist and what are the narcissist checklist of traits?
So a narcissist is someone who is very self-serving in who they are. They come from an entitlement background and they look at the world through their own eyes. And so if it makes sense to them, then it's okay. But they really lack empathy and don't understand how their actions and behaviors might cause issue or might cause pain in somebody else because it's all about them. You know, and I think, you know, one of the easiest way of kind of identifying them is they are the ultimate energy vampires of the world. You know, you try to sit there and talk to them and they just dominate the conversation, or they get you into a pity party because the world is out to get them. And in my personal experience, they tend to be very lazy because then they can get you to do everything. And they're just... They just are, you know, they have so much, there's just so much that goes on with them that I'll just say you have to read the book because there's just so much material that is tied to them. But once you understand what narcissistic behavior is like, you can just start picking them out in a crowd. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, that was where some of my big ahas came from. It was like, really? Really? So, for example, one of the things I talk about in the book is a concept called gaslighting. And they do gaslighting to kind of make you crazy. Well, I never heard that concept before because I never really studied this kind of behavior. And they do things like they'll say something to you and then you call them on what they say or what they do and they deny that it ever happened. Oh, well, I didn't do that. I didn't take the garbage. You know, like, I didn't do that. And it's crazy making. I mean, I was talking about the gentleman I was seeing, and he would literally hide things. I found a shoe that went missing, a shoe that I was looking for months, hidden behind books in a bookcase. Who does weird crap like that? But it's crazy making because you're wanting and you're looking for it, and they deny moving it or touching it, even though you know they did. You know...
It's interesting that you talk about gaslighting because that's something that the news has been, the word that the news has been using quite a bit in the last couple of years in reference to a certain political leader. So that concept of gaslighting, doing something and then being in total denial about doing it is just something that seems to be a major trait of the narcissist.
And it really is designed to make you crazy and doubt yourself. I mean, one aspect of gaslighting is to sit there and start saying disparaging things about your family, you know, because then you think, well, maybe there are issues and maybe I need to watch out for this person. And now you back your energy away from your close friends and family so that they can isolate you more and get you more under their mental control. Narcissists tend to be pretty control freaks, not necessarily external control freaks, but like mental control freaks. They want your time and your attention devoted exclusively to them. So whether you're devoting your time to them because you're solving all of their problems or because you are, you know, all into them and giving them all of your attention, you know, or they could be on a wild, crazed, gaslighting rampage, but now you're paying attention to them because they are making you crazy, you know, and it's all about attention. It's all about, the term is narcissistic supply. You become the feed bag. And it's like, you know, here, let me get some energy from you. And Victor, we were talking about my upbringing. I became a great feedback. Oh, my God. Great.
Yeah. Is narcissism an emotional failing or is it an actual mental illness?
Everyone has a certain amount of narcissistic characteristics within us. And it is something that is good for our self-esteem and good for our ego. But, you know, there's kind of a line, you know, and you can be a bit narcissistic, but still be healthy and be able to be empathic with people in relationships, you know, but it's a spectrum. And the further you get down the spectrum, the more self-serving and self-centered you become, and you don't really care about other people's feelings and other people's boundaries, up to and including cluster B personality disorders, which includes narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, histrionic personality disorder, and psychotic personality disorder. All of them have very strong narcissistic tendencies, obviously with the narcissistic personality disorder being the most narcissistic. But I'm going to put in a little caveat. From what I understand, narcissistic personality disorder and someone that is, you know, psychotic, the narcissist doesn't necessarily do things self-serving with intentionality behind it. Or someone that's a psychopath, you know, will hurt you because they want to hurt you, you know, or do things because they want to hurt you, you know. And so there is a difference in intentionality with someone, in my opinion, with narcissistic personality disorder versus someone that's just a psychopath.
How does one tell where that borderline falls, that it's just a basic emotional failing, perhaps from something that happened in their childhood versus an out-and-out psychosis?
I don't have an answer for that. I know that according to psychiatric texts, there are like 9 categories that you can fall into, or, you know, 9 characteristics. And if you display 4 of the 9 or 5, you know, there's some number. But even in looking at that, so there are overt narcissists and then covert narcissists. And that list tends to be talk more about people. All right. So an overt narcissist is someone, you know, they were the football player on the team and they got big energy and they're just going to tell everybody how great they are. You know, so like if you think of certain political leaders, he's pretty overt in his self-grandizing about himself.
The smartest, the healthiest, the best.
Right. But then you have the covert narcissists who tend to seem very quiet. They tend to seem very introverted. They might have, you know, like a little pity party thing going on. They can seem very spiritual. However, once you get past that little surface, their tendencies are all very self-serving.
Mm. There's the old story.
And they're the scariest ones.
Because they're so hidden.
Yes.
There's the old story about the person having the conversation with the narcissist, and the narcissist goes on and on and on, and then says, enough about me, let's talk about you. What do you think about me? And that was the classic conversation between the narcissist and someone else. But this is
but you know, it is kind of that way, or you could sit there and start talking to them about, oh, well, you know, I saw such and such and such on the news. And then they take the conversation away from you and talk for 20 minutes. And then finally you figure out a way to cut back in and you get a sentence. And then they take the conversation back and you sit and listen a lot.
I worked for a gentleman many years ago for a short time who was like that, that you could be having a conversation. This gentleman would go on and on and on and then would come to what would be a common pause in a normal conversation with anyone else. And you start to say something, and they start responding as if you're not even sitting there. So this is the type of conversation we're talking about.
Exactly. You know, and God forbid you're talking to them about a deficit they have, you know, because they will turn that around. It's like, well, why didn't you wash the dishes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, but I took out the garbage and I did all this and, you know, 3 years ago, you know, you were supposed to wash the car, but you didn't do that. And it takes, you know, like you talking to them about what's going on now, here today, into some other dimension somewhere.
My guest is Dr. Rita Louise. She's the author of the new book, The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist. Rita, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about this work.
Okay. The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist is available at all your major retailers, so like Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's available in ebook format as well. If you're interested in getting an autographed copy, because those are available, you can get one if you purchase it directly through my website, which is soulhealer.com.
And we'll be back with more of Rita after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, my friend Dr. Rita Louise, we're talking about her brand new book, The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist. So Rita, we've defined the narcissist. What's an empath?
So an empath is someone who is very sensitive to what is going around them. So if there is upset going on in the room, it's like they can feel that in their body. Individuals who are empaths tend to work, and I'm going to say in the helping field, you know, so like doctors, nurses, but anything where there's like a need to have a customer service type attitude, because they feel what other people feel. So if the other person you're with is feeling good, they're going to feel good. But God forbid that something happens and the energy dynamic shifts, the empath can immediately feel that and is going to want to respond to that change of energy. You know, so they've been termed psychic sponges, you know, and the way I help people identify whether they're an empath or not is, can you go to Walmart and not like get overloaded with energy, you know, or go to a concert or a fair and not walk around and just feel overwhelmed? But, you know, after an hour or so, but you know, that means that you're taking on this energy.
But empaths can train themselves and protect themselves from that. Uh-oh.
Yeah. You can get better at it and you can become more aware of it. But if somebody could train me, I would be glad. Yeah.
So how,
you know, I mean, because it's just, you know, our auric field is just there. And so, yeah, you can put up boundaries and not be as overwhelmed by it. But it still is going to seep in, you know, because for people that are empaths, it's like their feeling channel is kind of how they navigate the world. You know, and one of the things that I talk about in the book is the creation of an empath, which I think would be good to put in here. Is that because, so I did a survey on Facebook in a group called An Empath. And the question I asked was how many, and so these are people that self-identify as empaths. And the question I asked was, growing up, was there childhood abuse or neglect or some kind of heavy trauma in the family environment? Over 85% of the people that responded said that there was some kind of abuse or neglect or something unsavory in their upbringing. And what I have come to find is that when you grow up in a troubled environment, you end up learning how to kind of take your feeling tentacles and reach out into the space around you, because if dad comes home and he's in a bad mood, it's like you want to know right away so that you can go run and hide. And so it teaches you to use your spidey sense to navigate the energy of the world and the dynamics of the world, which makes you highly sensitive. A blessing and a curse for many of us.
And the empathic response is how do empaths normally respond in these types of situations?
I mean, I know how I respond. I mean, I think feeling overwhelmed is probably the best way of putting it. And then how you deal with the overwhelm is how you deal with the overwhelm, you know. So if you recognize that you're overwhelmed, then you get out of that situation, then you can use that time to discharge yourself. I mean, I know that growing up, I would very easily get overwhelmed, and the way I dealt with it was not very healthy, you know, because I would just kind of like flip out because it was overwhelming. I mean, it was overwhelming, just overwhelming, you know. So then, boom, the finger got pointed. Oh, well, you have issues. Ooh, you have issues. It's like, no, I'm freaking overwhelmed.
Absolutely. Without going into a lot of detail, my personal story is that what was wired in my young mind because of the relationship I had with my dad was that in order to avoid scorn and anger, I would do everything in my power to please him. And when he became ill, when I was very young, I became part of his healing team with my mom. And that wired in my brain that if you help to heal and give love to others, you will get love back. I became a people pleaser.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting, you know, kind of taking it to the next level. You know, it's great to be an empath. However, if you're a wounded empath, then you can find yourself getting into situations where you become a people pleaser, where there is this belief, you know, an early childhood belief that that is how you get love. But now, as an adult, you get into these relationships with other people and you're still operating on the belief, well, if I take care of this person, if I do anything this person needs, they're going to love me. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we get into that dysfunctional dance because, you know, wounded empaths, you know, they want to help, they want to serve, they want to give, give, give. And then we have the narcissistic personality who doesn't want to do anything and they want to take, take, take. And so you have this giver that gets together with this taker in an unholy relationship that's just destined for unhappiness.
Especially for the empath. In addition to people pleasing, what are the specific behaviors we may see in an empath that attracts and allows the narcissist?
You know, it is many times individuals that have self-worth issues. You know, they feel like they're broken. They feel, you know, like other people are better than them. There is this people pleasing, you know, the technical word for that is subjugation, which is like, ooh, that's a scary word, you know, where you basically give up of yourself in order to make somebody else happy, you know, which can devolve even further from just the people pleasing part into full blown codependency where you can't even survive without having this person around or having their approval for doing anything in your life. I forgot the question.
About the types of things that an empath that attracts the narcissist.
You know, empaths tend to be full of love and light, you know, and they're very accepting and they're very understanding. And a narcissist can spot that out. And, you know, many times if they're wounded, you know, because we're really talking about a wounded empath, you know, because if you're a healthy empath, you have good boundaries. If you meet somebody with narcissistic characteristics and they're trying to take advantage of you, you're like, I'm out of here, you know, but it's the ones that have self-esteem and self-worth issues that tend to stay because they don't know any better or they don't realize, you know, in my case, I didn't realize I had a choice. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, I made a commitment, so now I'm stuck here for forever.
You talk about this in your book, but let's give our listeners, most of our listeners, I would say, are empathic. Let's give our listeners a couple of clues as to how they would know that the partner they're with is a narcissist.
You know, I think the biggest thing is that if you're in a relationship with someone and you're unhappy, you know, we all have moments when we're with our friends or, you know, whatever, that we're unhappy. But if the unhappiness exists in a day-to-day thing, then you have to take a step back and go, well, is it me or is it the relationship? You know, if you're with someone who doesn't want to take responsibility, never wants to apologize for anything and wants to put it all on you, then you might be in one of these relationships. You know, they say that relationships are supposed to be 50-50, but if it's a relationship between a wounded empath and a narcissist, they tend to be more like 80-20, 90-10, and then if something happens to you, so let's say you get a cold and you're sick and you just aren't feeling well, they won't step up to the plate. They won't try to fill in that gap at all and will possibly even just get mad because you're not feeling well and why aren't you taking care of them? Mm. You know, and so, and it's interesting because once you understand the behavior, it's like a giant light bulb goes off in your head and it's like, oh my God. And you can start pointing at people like, oh, well, so-and-so did this. I mean, that was one of the big things in writing this book was to give people definitions and terms so that they could sit there and reflect on their own lives and go, oh my God, you know, this is me or this is what I'm doing. And oh my God, you know, my relationship with so-and-so was just like that, you know, because again, we grew up in dysfunction. And so we don't recognize that we are continuing the dysfunction in our own intimate relationships.
What is that invisible force that can lead an otherwise kind and open-hearted adult to draw a narcissist to them in relationship?
Well, but I think the biggest thing is that, you know, you're full of love and life and healing, and many times they come and they seem damaged. And so the wounded parts of both individuals, because narcissists are damaged too, you know, the wounded parts of both individuals find hope and comfort with each other in a very, again, dysfunctional way.
And that's the whole key. It's dysfunction. It's not something that's truly healthy.
It is not healthy at all.
Not healthy at all. My guest is Dr. Rita Louise. Her book is called The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist: Create Healthy Relationships by Healing Childhood Trauma. And we'll be back with more of Rita after these words on the OM Times Radio Network. Roll up to the Mystical Minds Convention. Step right this way. Coming March 28th and 29th in Newark, California, just south of San Francisco, the first annual Mystical Minds Convention. Founded by Melanie Marquis, Mystical Minds is a new pagan, paranormal, and metaphysical convention created to expand our minds as well as our networks. Enjoy a weekend of fun, learning, and making connections in a comfortable and welcoming space that fosters unity by honoring the diversity of minds, bodies, and spirits. This is Victor the Voice Furman, and I am honored to be a featured presenter and panelist. For more information and to register, visit mysticalmindsconvention.com and roll up for the Mystical Minds Convention. Step right this way.
Teens in foster care will love you, even if you don't know the lingo.
Dad bod, noun. The result of the occasional donut always washed down with confidence.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Dr. Rita Louise, the author of the new book, The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist. Rita, you talked about this yourself. What happens to the child who stands up to a narcissistic parent? Are they further intimidated or banished or forsaken or ignored? Or does the parent become more controlling and mean-spirited?
I think the parent becomes more controlling and mean-spirited, you know, if the parent is being abusive to the child, you know, there's this part of them that wants the child to comply, you know, like resistance is futile, and they want them to comply with the will of the parents. And so it doesn't really matter. See, this is where it comes back to that feelings thing. It doesn't really matter what the child wants, what the child thinks, what the child feels. It is all about what the parent wants, and regardless of what is going on in the child, they will, by hook or by crook, make that happen.
Now, if someone has a narcissist parent and sees the other parent modeling dysfunctional behavior, does that start that program? Can it start the program?
Well, I mean, I think as children, we don't recognize, you know, what's going on, because we're just there. And, you know, it's only until you can really take a step outside of what's going on that you can see that.
But for example, if you have a father who is a bullying father and the mother kowtows to the bullying father, does the child and sees that there's a sort of a settlement of energy when that takes place, does the child develop that pattern also?
What I have found is that the child will take on one or the other role, or they might switch back and forth from one role to the other. But I think it's more often that they will think that the only way to be healthy in a relationship is to try to dominate it, or the only way to be healthy in the relationship is to kowtow. You know, and so, I mean, because when we're little, we are being trained, we are learning, this is how the world operates, and this is how we have relationships, and, you know, which is what makes it hard. You know, I'm going to kind of change topics here a second. So on Facebook, this woman posted something about self-forgiveness. And I made the comment that, you know, in order to experience forgiveness, you have to accept the fact, you know, of your part in the whole thing. And oh my God, she had a heart attack on me. And told me that I was a narcissist and I was gaslighting her. And it was like, no. You know, but when you grow up, you know, if you are the experienced abuse, there really is this part that you have to accept your role in it. And even if you were a child, you did choose to believe the false beliefs. You did choose to say, this is how life is, and then move forward with it. Now, granted, you were a child. You didn't know any better, you know, and this, that was your life and that was your world. But there's also taking ownership, because once you take ownership of, well, okay, you know, yes, they treated me bad and it created self-worth issues in me or whatever your thing is, you know, but I allowed that to happen. I allowed me, my authentic self, to be compromised, you know. And so what can I do to become myself again, to become whole again? Because now I'm taking responsibility for my dysfunction.
Someone's in a relationship with a narcissist. Can they help that narcissist get treatment, especially since the narcissist always thinks he or she is perfect, knows best, is smarter than the partner?
On occasion, a narcissist will go and seek help. But most of the time, they will only go because it will extend the relationship. You know, because one of the things about narcissists is that they're perpetual liars. And so if you are in a relationship, and I'm going to kind of take this to the extreme, with a person who's a narcissist and he's a beater, he does physical violence, you know, so now you have the situation, you didn't respect him the way he wanted to be respected, he now just beat the crap out of you. And after this whole thing plays out, now he comes back and he's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do that. You know, well, okay, you know, if you want to go to counseling, we can do that. Which is just to placate the person that they just beat so that they don't walk out the door. I mean, it's this whole game. It's just a game. And so I don't know if that answered the question.
It does. So you, in essence, would advise that, forgetting about trying to get treatment, you would advise people to get out of those relationships with narcissists.
Yes, I mean, especially if they're physical, very much so, because they're not interested in changing. You know, as I say in the book, dancing is a whole lot easier than going for therapy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so keeping this dynamic going on, you know, the narcissist does something that is upsetting to you. They crossed your boundary, you know, whatever that thing is, you know. It's like the gentleman that I was most recently with, it was drinking, you know, and I had a boundary. It's like, you know, don't be drinking. You know, it's one thing if we get a six pack of beer. It's a totally different thing if you have a bottle of bourbon stashed in the bathroom.
Mm, absolutely.
Totally different thing. Absolutely. And he would just, you know, have another bottle, and then I'd find it and I'd have a meltdown. You know, it's like, but I never kicked him out. You know, oh no, I'll go to AA. Oh, we can go to therapy. You know, and there'd be all these platitudes of, you know, oh, we're going to do this, which is called future faking, which actually they have vocabulary for their behavior, which is just even more amazing. And to get you back in, to suck you back in so that you'll dance with them some more until you decide you don't like this dance routine and you get out of it.
What's the exit strategy?
You know, the exit strategy is to, one, make sure you're safe, you know, because sometimes the situation can be volatile. You know, so whether that's kicking them out of the house, one of the things that I learned is that if a person, so if you're not married or if you're married and the person lives at the house and their physical mail comes to the house, whether their name is on the deed or lease or whatever, you can't kick them out, at least not in the state of Texas. You can't kick them out. You have to evict them. So that was a big hello for me. And so I'm going to just put that out there. You know, but there are some women that'll just go to a homeless shelter, you know, depending on what is going on. But basically the advice, you know, if it's somebody that you're more dating, because if you're married, if you have kids together, it becomes a little more convoluted, is to limit access, limit contact with these people. You know, if you are have only been dating them, it's like take them off social media, block their phone number, you know, don't send them emails. Because one of the things that happens in these dynamics is that there are these emotional lows. You know, they do something, they beat you, they, you know, verbally abuse you, whatever it is, and it puts you into a giant cortisol release and other hormonal release. So you are down, down, down. And then they turn around and say, oh no, we're going to go to counseling and it'll be good and kumbaya. And now you've just had a dopamine high. And so you can become very emotionally and hormonally dysregulated because of this dynamic. And so you can walk out the door, but there's this part of you that is craving them. I mean, like literally craving them like heroin.
Do you recommend recommend psychological support for empaths who have left those relationships?
Very much so, for anybody who's left one of those relationships. You know, because bottom line, and really the point of the book, is you wouldn't have stayed in the relationship as long as you did if you were whole on the inside. You probably wouldn't have gotten involved in the relationship more than a couple of dates if you were whole on the inside. And that's really about, to me, taking responsibility for the situation and fixing the inside part. You know, and to answer your question, it finally came to me, you know, they're attracted to the wounding, to fix the wounding inside, because now you're not, you know, think law of attraction. If I think I'm worthless, you know, what am I sending out into the universe? Woo! Hey, universe, I'm worthless.
Yep.
Like, oh, yeah, there's a narcissist that likes worthless people.
Does denial play a big role in the dysfunction?
It does. You know, well, the narcissist, you know, that's one of the words in their vocabulary, denial, because they'll deny everything that they possibly did. You know, I mean, blind spots, I like that better than denial for the empath, although I think denial does come into play. I think there is a huge lack of not wanting to own it. You stay because you want to matter. You want somebody to love you. You want to be committed. You know, those are your needs that you're going into the relationship with, because you're not whole by yourself. And so it's hard to extricate yourself because you're still not whole.
How can you shine a light on those blind spots?
I think it's about learning about yourself and learning about your history and looking at your behavior and looking at your attitudes. You know, so whether that's through self-reflection, journaling, experiencing mindfulness, going to counseling, talking to your friends, it is a process that individuals can work through, getting to know yourself, getting to know your weak spots so that you don't have to do it anymore. I think one of the other things is really about putting your big girl panties on and having it be okay, because it's scary. I don't want to make it sound like it can be easy peasy. It could be the scariest thing you ever did in your whole entire life. But I'm going to tell you, it is worth it. It is the biggest e-ride and the biggest, baddest roller coaster in town, but it's worth it. Absolutely. Because when you get off the roller coaster, you're a different person.
Rita Louise, my guest this week on Destination Unlimited, her book, The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist. Rita, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Sure. My book is available, obviously, on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com in both print and ebook editions. If individuals want to learn more about myself or get a signed copy, they can go to my website, soulhealer.com, SOULHEALER.com, soulhealer.com.
Rita, thank you so much for this really, really personal work that you've done and the gift that you're giving others who are going to read this book and use what you teach them to get out of these really, really bad relationships. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Victor. Had no choice.
I know. And always a pleasure to have you with us. We're going to have you on again the next time around. And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice Furman. Have a wonderful weekend.